Have you ever wanted to look inside a living cell, not just at a static picture, but to truly see life at its most fundamental level, to watch the tiny proteins and DNA, you know, the very machinery of life actually move?
Yeah, it's something scientists dreamed about for a long time.
Because for decades, it felt like we only had these blurry, still photographs of these vital molecular machines. But here's the thing. Their true function, their very purpose, is in their motion.
Exactly. Understanding that intricate dynamic dance is absolutely key. It's how we can unlock profound insights into health and disease, and ultimately it's how we'll design smarter, more effective medicines that truly work with our bodies, not just, you know, against a static target.
Right. So today we're taking a deep dive into the groundbreaking work of Professor Olav Scheemann. He's the recent recipient of the prestigious 2025 International EPR Society's Medicine and Biology Medal.
A very big deal in the field.
Absolutely. And his journey, well, it's been pivotal in ushering in this whole new era of biology. People say he didn't just make a better lens for an old camera. He fundamentally invented a whole new way to film the invisible.
That's a great way to put it. He's really an architect of these new techniques.
He started by creating these microscopic reporters, then wielding what we'll call a molecular ruler, developing a kind of molecular GPS. And his work culminates in this landmark collaboration to film a truly critical event, a gateway to the cell opening and closing in, what, a millionth of a second? Just incredible speed.
Mind-boggling fast.
But let's start with the core challenge. What was the biggest hurdle scientists faced? Was it just their unimaginable size and speed trying to see these molecular events?
Well, their speed and size are certainly huge challenges, you're right. But the fundamental roadblock was even more basic, actually. The molecules we most want to watch, like proteins, DNA, they're diamagnetic.
Diamagnetic. Okay. What does that mean in practice?
It means they inherently lack the magnetic properties our instruments, specifically EPR instruments, need to see them directly. So they're essentially invisible to our scientific ears. It's like trying to listen to a whisper in a silent room with no microphone. You have to invent the microphone first.
Wow. Okay. That's incredible. An invisible problem at the molecular level. So how did scientists even begin to tackle something like that? Where do you start?
Right. This is where the ingenious concept of site-directed spin labeling comes in, SDSL. The idea was, okay, if the molecule is invisible, let's attach a tiny visible beacon, what's called a spin label.
A beacon, like a little flag.
Sort of, but a magnetic one. It is EPR active. Think of it like giving an invisible molecule a tiny magnetic radio transmitter that our instruments can hear. You attach this beacon to a specific pre-selected spot on a protein or DNA.
You choose where it goes.
Yes, precisely. And its unique electron magnetic signal, its whisper, tells you about its immediate environment. So, you know, what's happening right there. This was really the first step towards truly seeing molecules in action, not just inferring their presence or looking at static structures.
That sounds like a massive breakthrough.
Mm.
But I can imagine the early attempts weren't perfect, right?
Yeah.
What were the initial roadblocks with these spin labels?
Oh, you're absolutely right. The early spin labels had significant limitations. They were a bit like, well, floppy, unreliable trackers.
Sloppy.
Yeah, attached with long elastic tethers. So it was really hard to tell if the label itself was just flailing around wildly or if the protein it was attached to was actually moving in an interesting way.
Ah, so you couldn't trust the signal entirely.
Exactly. And worse, if you tried to use them inside living cells, the cell's natural chemistry, the reducing environment, would just destroy them in minutes.
Oh, okay. Not exactly practical for studying life then.
Not at all. And this is where Scheemann's breakthrough was so profound. His group engineered new spin labels that were rigid and stable.
How did they manage that?
They designed them to attach with short, stiff arms. This was critical because it ensured that any movement the label showed truly reflected the protein's own movement, or at least much more closely.
Okay, makes sense. Stiffer connection, clearer signal.
And they went even further. They created an entirely new class of labels called tritils. These things were incredibly robust, tough enough to survive and function inside living cells for much longer periods.
Wow. So, like, going from unreliable consumer trackers to something more like a military-grade, all-weather GPS tracker for molecules.
That's a perfect analogy. It really opened the door to studying these things in their natural environment.
Okay, that's a huge leap. But a single tracker, even a really great one, only gives you one point of information, right? Proteins aren't just points. They're complex, dynamic shapes that constantly change form. How do you map that entire molecular dance?
Exactly. That's the next piece of the puzzle. With robust beacons in place, the next challenge was measuring the distance between different parts of a molecule to understand its overall shape and, crucially, how it changes.
Right, you need more than one point to define a shape.
Precisely. And that's where Dear Double Electron Resonance became the molecular ruler.
Dear. Okay, the molecular ruler, how does that work?
So here's the concept. You attach two spin labels, or reliable beacons, to different spots on the protein you're interested in.
Two trackers now. Got it.
Then you use precisely timed microwave pulses. You can imagine it like having two tiny bells attached to different parts of the protein. You ping one bell with a microwave pulse, and you listen for how that ping affects the other bell. The energy resonates between them. The subtle way that second bell rings back, this faint magnetic chatter between the two labels, it's exquisitely sensitive to the distance separating them.
How sensitive?
Down to a nanometer, a billionth of a meter. It's incredibly precise.
A billionth of a meter.
Wow. And you mentioned earlier, it doesn't just give you one number for the distance.
No, and that's what truly unlocked their understanding. Dear doesn't just give you a single distance. It provides the full distribution of distances between the two labels over time or across many molecules.
The full distribution, what does that tell you?
It tells you about flexibility. So if a protein is flexible, imagine like a piece of cooked spaghetti that can bend and twist.
Okay.
The ruler shows a broad range of possible distances between the two points. But if it's rigid, like uncooked spaghetti, it shows one sharp, precise distance.
Ah, I see. So you can measure how much it's wiggling or changing shape.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
This ability to map molecular flexibility was groundbreaking. It revealed that many proteins aren't just static structures, like in the textbooks. They're dynamic dancers, and their subtle shifts, their flexibility, are absolutely critical for their function. And often, when things go wrong, like in disease, it's these dynamics that are altered. That's fascinating. Okay, so we have better, more stable trackers now, these Tridyls even. And we have a precise molecular ruler, Dear, to map shapes and flexibility using pairs of trackers. What if you wanted to find something specific within a molecule? You mentioned proteins sometimes have key components, like a metal ion maybe, but its exact location is unknown.
Right. Many of our body's most important enzymes, for example, rely on a single metal ion, maybe copper or iron, right at their core for their function. But finding its precise location can be elusive, even though it's absolutely key to how the enzyme works.
So how do you pinpoint something like that?
This is where Scheemann's team developed what they cleverly called their molecular GPS, using the principle of trilateration.
Trilateration. Like how my phone finds me.
Exactly like how your phone's GPS works. Your phone measures its distance from three or more satellites orbiting Earth to pinpoint your location on a map. So, Scheemann's team applied this same logic to a protein. They took one known to have a copper ion at its core, but its precise location was unknown, though vital for its function. They attached their stable spin labels to three different known locations on the protein surface, like three mini satellites anchored to the protein.
Three known points. Got it.
Then, using their molecular ruler, Dear, they measured the distance from each of these three known trackers to the unknown copper ion. The copper ion itself has a magnetic property they could interact with.
Ah, so three distances measured from known points to the one unknown point.
Exactly. And with those three distances.
A simple bit of geometry is all it took to calculate the precise 3D coordinates of the metal ion. They triangulated its position.
Precisely. They had pinpointed the active site, the exact spot where the protein does its critical work. It was a beautiful demonstration of combining these tools.
That's really elegant. So Scheemann had built this incredible toolkit for studying the precise shapes, the flexibility, even pinpointing locations within static or slowly changing molecules. Groundbreaking stuff. But the next logical step, well, it was also the most ambitious of all, to add the fourth dimension time. To actually make a molecular movie.
To see the action unfold. And this wasn't something one lab could just decide to do alone. It was too complex. To achieve this, it really required a landmark collaboration between three world-leading scientists, each bringing a unique and absolutely essential piece of the puzzle. No single group had all the expertise.
Okay, so who were the players and what was the movie about? What were they trying to film?
The star of this molecular movie was a crucial piece of cellular machinery, an ion channel.
Ion channel, right? Those are like the gatekeepers on the surface of our cells, especially nerve cells.
Exactly. Think of it as a tiny, highly specific gate controlling what goes in and out of the cell. This particular one regulated ions. Its function is truly remarkable and fundamental to life. Normally, this gate is closed, but when it receives a specific signal in this case, a tiny molecule called CAMP, cyclic AMP.
That's the key.
That's the key. When CAMP binds, the channel quickly opens, letting specific ions flood through the gate. This rapid influx of ions is the foundation of all electrical signaling in our nervous system. Everything from your thoughts to muscle movement relies on channels like this, opening and closing precisely.
And it happens incredibly fast, you say?
Oh, yeah. Millions of a second. Microseconds. Far too fast to see with conventional methods.
Okay, so a super fast, super important cellular gate.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the experts needed to film this? You mentioned three.
Yes. First, they brought in Professor U. Benjamin Kalp, a leading expert on these specific ion channels.
And what was his team's crucial contribution?
His team had perfected a truly revolutionary device, the microsecond freeze hyperquench machine.
Freeze hyperquench? Sounds intense.
It is. Think of it like an ultra-fast microscopic blender. It can mix two things in this case, the closed ion channel and its key, CAMP, and then instantly flash freeze tiny droplets of that mixture at precise preset moments in time.
Flash freeze, like stop motion animation.
Exactly like that. It allowed them to capture perfect time-stamped snapshots or frames of this incredibly fast reaction. They could freeze the action, say, 82 microseconds after mixing, then 100 microseconds, 150, and so on, creating the individual frames for the movie.
Wow. Okay, so Kalp provides the frozen frames. Who's next?
Well, naturally, the person in charge of analyzing these microscopic frozen moments was Professor Olaf Schiemann, our EPR expert.
Makes sense. His role?
His critical role was to take each of those individual frozen frames from Kalp's machine. For every single snapshot, his team would use his molecular ruler, the DEER technique, to measure the channel's exact shape, specifically the distance between labels placed on parts they knew would move when it opened at that precise moment in frozen time. He is essentially measuring the state of the gate in each frame.
Okay, so Kalp makes the frames. Schiemann measures the shape in each frame. Who was the third expert?
To make sense of all these frames, and importantly, to understand the underlying mechanics, they needed Professor Helmut Grubmüller, a computational expert, a theorist.
The simulation side of things.
Exactly. His team ran massive supercomputer simulations. These are essentially virtual movies at the atomic level. These simulations predicted exactly how the channel should move, atom by atom, based on the fundamental laws of physics. They could model its intended choreography, you know, how the protein structure itself was expected to rearrange.
So you have the experimental frames, the measurements of shape in those frames, and the theoretical prediction of how it should move. Quite a team.
A real powerhouse trio.
Okay, so walk us through the experiment itself. It sounds incredibly complex.
It was a tour de force, really. Kalp's machine mixed the closed channels with CAMP. It let the reaction proceed for a precisely controlled time, 82 microseconds, 100, whatever they said.
Right.
Then instantly shot tiny droplets of this mixture onto a spinning cylinder cooled with liquid helium, cryo-cooled, freezing them solid almost instantly.
Wow.
And they repeated this over and over for many different time points, creating this comprehensive library of frozen samples. Each vial represented a specific moment in the channel's opening journey.
Like a time-lapse library of frozen molecules.
Exactly. Then Schiemann's team took over. They meticulously analyzed each of these frozen samples using DEER, their molecular ruler. They measured the distant distribution between the parts of the channel they labeled, essentially tracking how far open the gate was in each sample.
And what did they find? Did they get their movie?
They did. The results were clear. As they looked at samples frozen at later and later times, they saw the signal shift from the closed distance to the open distance. The data showed it took about 150 microseconds for the channel population to fully open.
150 microseconds? They had timed it.
They had their movie. A truly stunning achievement, capturing something that fast. But then, then a fascinating puzzle emerged.
A puzzle? After all that work?
Yeah. Because Grubmüller's supercomputer simulations, the ones based on pure physics, they predicted something completely different for the physical movement. The simulations showed the actual swinging open of the protein gate, the structural rearrangement, should happen on the nanosecond timescale.
Nanosecond?
Yeah.
But the experiment showed microseconds. That's 1,000 times slower.
Exactly. 1,000-fold difference. How do you reconcile that? Did the experiment miss something? Was the simulation wrong? It was a real head-scratcher.
So what was the answer? Who was right?
Well, this is the beautiful part. The answer was that neither the experiment nor the simulation was wrong. both were right.
How can that be?
Because they were measuring slightly different things, and realizing that revealed a profound truth about how these molecular machines actually work. A truth that would have been completely missed without all three expert perspectives, the experiment, the measurement, and the theory working together.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What was the profound truth?
The 150 microseconds measured by Sheeman wasn't the time it took for the gate itself to physically swing open. That was nanoseconds, just like Rivmuller predicted. The 150 microseconds was the average waiting time. What do they call the dwell time?
Waiting time. Dwell time. What does that mean?
Okay, imagine this. The key, CMP, binds to the lock, the channel. The channel is now unlocked and ready to open.
Right.
But it doesn't open immediately. It sort of hesitates. It waits, on average, for about 150 microseconds in an intermediate state. Kind of primed, but not yet open. Almost like it's taking a breath before the action.
So it's not the speed of the movement, but the time spent before the movement happened.
Precisely. Then, when it finally decides to move, the physical opening itself, the gate swinging, is an incredibly fast nanosecond event, just as the physics predicted. It was this hidden pause, this intermediate waiting state that the experiment captured. The average time spent dwelling in that ready but not open state before snapping open.
Wow. That's a much more complex picture, a pause before the action.
Exactly. And this crucial insight truly highlights the power of this collaborative approach. Without Kaup providing those precise snapshots,
mm-hmm.
without Sheeman measuring the shapes in those snapshots, and without Grubb-Mueller simulating the underlying physics, they wouldn't have understood the full story. They didn't just film a movie. They literally revealed the hidden script and the stage directions of molecular action.
That's incredible. So this work, it's really opened up a whole new frontier in understanding life,
mm-hmm.
not just as static parts, but as a dynamic moving system.
Absolutely. We're moving beyond just snapshots and into the, you know, the living, breathing, moving reality of how our cells actually function second by second or microsecond by microsecond.
And what are the implications? How does this help us?
Well, connecting this to the bigger picture, it means we can now potentially see how diseases work at this level.
Mm-hmm.
Things like cystic fibrosis or certain cardiac arrhythmias, which we know are caused by faulty ion channels. We might now be able to see exactly how the faulty channel's movement or its waiting time is disrupted. It gives us a whole new window into the malfunction.
And for developing new medicines.
Oh, it's invaluable for drug designers. They can now potentially see precisely how a candidate drug molecule binds to its target protein. Does it change the shape? Does it affect that critical waiting time? Does it speed up or slow down the action? It's like having, well, molecular X-ray vision for drug discovery and optimization.
Professor Olav Sheeman's work, looking back at it, really exemplifies that iterative nature of scientific discovery, doesn't it?
It really does.
He identified this fundamental problem. We can't see the essential motion of life. And then just systematically built the tools, piece by piece, label by label, technique by technique, to solve it.
Yeah, it's a masterclass. He took what was once a very specialized niche technique, EPR spectroscopy, and transformed it into an absolute powerhouse for modern biology and biophysics. He's giving us a fundamentally new way to see not just static photographs anymore, but dynamic, living, moving pictures of the very machinery that makes us who we are.
It really changes how you think about what's happening inside us all the time.
Right.
And it leaves you wondering, think about this. If a simple gate on a cell can have this hidden waiting time before it performs its action, what other biological processes might involve similar hidden pauses, hesitations, or intermediate steps that we've just never been able to see until now because we didn't have the tools?
That's a great question.
And what might those unseen moments, those little delays or preparations, reveal about how life truly works?
Mm.
Or perhaps, you know, how diseases actually begin to take hold. There could be whole layers of regulation happening in those pauses.
It definitely opens up exciting new questions. There's still so much to see.